I think we titled the name of this talk, Sages and Sinners. And I was able to step in for the last couple of minutes of Rav Gemara's Shi'ur, and much of it focused on Rabbi Abahu. So we're going to continue with Rabbi Abahu in this talk. The truth of the matter is, I plan not to lecture with you, but to study and learn together with you. So be prepared to provide your thoughts and your opinions, because that's how we'll conduct this session. I selected an Agadah from the Yerushalmi, and those of you who are familiar a bit with the Yerushalmi, you'll notice that the language here is Hebrew. I translated the Aramaic into Hebrew because I thought that would be easier for us to work from, because even those of us familiar with Aramaic may not be as familiar with Western Aramaic that you have in the Talmud Yerushalmi. It is a Agadah found in Masechet Ta'anit. And Masechet Ta'anit, both in the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, is primarily concerned with issues of how does a community respond to a drought in Israel. Israel is dependent on the rains for its agricultural cycle. This past year in Israel was one of the worst droughts in decades, and everyone knows that water is an essential element in the Middle East, and in particular to Israel. And we as Jews have religious responses to droughts. We look at it as not simply a natural phenomenon, but we see the connection of the Jewish people and Hashem will be mediated on some level through the rains that come down or don't come down. And when they don't, what is our response? What are the prayers that we say? What are the fasts that we may establish in order to beseech HaKadosh Baruch Hu that the rain should ultimately come? And this Agadah sets itself in a situation where there was a drought, and no matter what the community did in terms of praying, the rains had not come down. And so what I'd like to do with you is to read through and translate this Agadah, and then we'll begin to analyze it together. So I'll say before I read and translate, to think about what may seem strange to you. I think certain things will jump out at you, and certain things will become clear or even strange as we read through it and look at it more carefully. So with that, let's begin. Nira l'Rabbi Abahu. Rabbi Abahu had a vision. Pentakaka yitpalel v'yered matar. Pentakaka, should he pray, the rains will come. Shalach Rabbi Abahu v'havio. Rabbi Abahu had people bring Pentakaka to him, and he was brought to him. Amar lo, ma umnutecha? He said to him, what is your profession? Amar lo, he responded back, chamesh averot oto ha'ish over b'chol yom. Five sins does this man do daily. Mikashei tiatron, he decorates the theater. V'socher hetiarot, he hires the actors. Umevi bigdehen lebeit hamerchatz, he brings the clothing to the bathhouse. Umitapeach umirakeid lifnehen, he prances and dances before them. Umekish betzaltzalim lifnehem, and he sounds the timbrels before them, some kind of a instrument he's playing in front of them. Amarlo, Rabbi Bel says to him further, umatova asita, what goodness have you done? Amarlo, he responded back, pamachat haya oto ish mekashei tiatron. Once a man was decorating the theater, uba isha achat, a certain woman came, v'amada la acharei ha'amud kishehi bocha, and she stood on the other side of the stage, the back side of the stage, crying. Amarti la, I said to her, ma'iske, what's your story? Amara, she said, ba'ala shel ota isha chavshuhu, the husband of that woman has been taken captive. V'hi mevakeshet lerot ma lasot kedei lahatiro. And she is looking to see what to do in order to gain his freedom. U'macharti mitati v'matza she'al mitati. And I sold my bed and the mattress upon the bed. V'natati la demehem. And I gave her the money. V'amarti la. And I said to her, this is for you, take it, free your husband, but do not sin. Amalo, Rabbi Bao said to Pentakaka, Kadai ata shetipalel veteana. It is appropriate that you should pray and your prayers be answered. That's the Agadah. And so now I pose to you, what's strange to you about this Agadah? Yes. Right. Oh, crazy, right? Who's on first, what's on second? Who's being spoken about? So tell us where it gets. No, it does mean Pentecost. Right. So if you look at line 6, so Pentakaka, in response to Rebbe Abao's question of what do you do for a living, he speaks about himself in the third person. And I'm already telling you what I think it is. He's not talking about somebody else. He's talking about himself. And he says, that man, meaning me, does 5 sins daily. Maybe. That's right. He's in the theater, so that's how we speak, right? The royal we, or something along those lines. But I think there may be more to it than that. And I'll, in interest of intellectual honesty, I must say that it is not uncommon, or I should say it in the positive, it is common that third person is used in agadic stories for people to talk about themselves when they really mean first person. So it's not uncommon, but I would like to think that in this story it has more meaning than just literary style. Yes. What's so bad about what he did? He just worked in the theater. Right. Okay. Obviously, we're going to have to deal with that because that's, right, the ikar of the story. What does he do wrong? What does he do right? And let's not forget Rabbi Abahu's conclusion at the end. He says, you're the man. You're the one who should pray and should you pray, the rains should come down because you're deserving to have your prayers answered. Yes. Right. You list your sins. That is a strange answer to the question, what do you do for a living? Indeed. Yes. Also here, Rabbi Bo shows the selective. Very good. Very insightful question. Like, didn't he know this? By the way, is there a Yiddish word in this story? What word would you pick out if I, you know, posing it that way, that there's a Yiddish word in here? What word would you say is Yiddish? What? Pentakaka. What kind of a name is Pentakaka? Well, okay, Greek. Clearly it's Greek. And where, why do you say Greek? Okay, that's right. I mean, kaka in any language is not good, right? So Pentakaka. And that raises your point or makes your point even more striking, because what mother would name her child Pentakaka? No one. It's inconceivable that you would name your child Pentakaka. So who is Pentakaka? I mean, having read the story, what kind of a person do you think he is? Yes. And you say that because the second half of the story. And no question, you're absolutely right. But in the first part of the story, when we get to know him, I'll still ask the question, you know, what does he do for a living? What's the answer to the question of what does he do for a living? He runs a theater. So what was theater associated with in this period of time, in the Mishnaic and Talmudic period? Was it, we think of theater, we think of high culture, right? You're going to see some type of dramatic presentation, perhaps even a musical. I'm not sure I'd call musicals high culture, but theater is considered in Western culture today high culture. But in these days, what was the theater associated with? With what? Very secular activities. Even more secular than you're willing to say, or what?
Than the gym.
More than the gym. There's a Beit HaMerchatz. Idolatry. Although I don't know that we have any hint of idolatry in the story. Sexual immorality. Licentiousness. The truth of the matter is, what Pentakaka did for a living, no Jewish boy should be involved in. And when going back to the name Pentakaka, that is not Chaim is his real name, okay? But Pentakaka is the name that he went by when he did the kinds of things that he did. And so now, if you put that into context, the question of what do you do for a living, and he says five sins this man does, meaning myself, daily, we're talking about truly an answer to the question, and now tie that into the third person. Why does he speak of himself in the third person if it's not anything more than just the literary style? Why would someone speak of himself in the third person? Yes? Well, that's good, but you and me, the reader, we don't know, we know that there's a second part of the story. Pentakaka doesn't know that there is going to be a further question. All he knows is the question at hand. He's been asked, what do you do for a living? And he refers to himself in the third person, and I think you were beginning to touch upon it, because if he's talking about himself in the third person, there's a certain amount of distance that he's creating. That person does it, but that's not who I really am. But at the same time, he's modeh al ha'emet. He admits to what he is. And daily, he does these five sins. That's right. My friend, who's really me, that's a way to project, you know, elsewhere, because you don't want it to come back to you. So here he is, he asks that question, and he answers that question. You're not going to like it, but that person has done this. Perhaps. Let's talk about Rabbi Abahu for a second. I was brought up with learning that when you look at these Agadic stories, they are literary pieces that are tightly developed, and every part of the story is essential to the story. So we have a series of two questions here. What do you do for a living? And what goodness did you do? Let's think about it from Rabbi Abahu's point of view. Are there too many questions here? I mean, what was Rabbi Abahu posed with? He had a vision. He saw that if Pentakaka prays, the rains will come. So what question should Rabbi Abahu be asking? Pentakaka. What? Will you pray? Okay, that's a question that's not asked here at all. Will you pray? That would be just straightforward. He has a vision. Pentakaka, should he pray, the rains will come. And he brings him and says, you know, be our shliach tzibur. He doesn't do that. What question that we have here does make perfect sense? What? Right. What goodness have you done? That makes sense. And why would that be a question that Rabbi Abahu would want to ask? Okay. That assumes that he has no knowledge of Pentakaka before. I would like to suggest he is well aware of who Pentakaka is. Everybody knows Pentakaka. Right? This is, again, this is his stage name. He knows that his real name is Chaim Yankel. But Pentakaka, so what's bothering Rabbi Abahu is, what? Pentakaka is going to pray and the rains will come down? That makes no sense. There is a certain amount of righteous indignation that's coming forth from Rabbi Abahu by the very question he's asking. He doesn't know what Pentakaka does for a living. He knows exactly what Pentakaka does for a living. And so it's rhetorical. Tell me, what do you do for a living? And he gets a surprise answer. He doesn't get, I do. He says, Chamesh Averot Oto Ha'ish Oseh B'chol Yom. Five sins that person does daily. And Rabbi Abahu gets surprised at the kind of person that Pentakaka is. He begins to reformulate, perhaps, in his mind, the kind of person that he has in front of him. And then he goes on to ask the appropriate question, which is, what did you do to deserve being a person? And again, Pentakaka doesn't know why he was summoned to see Rabbi Abahu. We know that, but Pentakaka doesn't know that. And so just out of the blue, he says, what goodness have you done? And he sees the great Rabbi Abahu is asking him, what goodness has he done? He knows that Rabbi Abahu is on to him on some level. And so he starts to tell him what he does for a living. What's surprising in the second part of the story? He tells the story. This woman comes. And, first of all, let's take it piece by piece. What is the woman up to? This woman. We know her circumstance. Her husband's been taken captive. Yeah, why do you think she's there? To sell herself. She's there to sell herself because she feels she has no way out. Her husband's been taken captive. She's not the breadwinner. She has no money. By the way, it was not uncommon for Jews just to be hopped up, taken at ransom, forcing the community to come up with money. The person didn't do anything wrong. This was her misfortune that her husband was taken captive. And she'll do anything to save her husband. And this is the only thing that she can think of. And she doesn't want to do it. That's why she's crying. This is a woman who's not going, she's going reluctantly. She's willing to do it, but she's going reluctantly. Yes. Right. That's right. Yeah, exactly. That's right. And so that's the great mitzvah that Pentakaka is involved in. He saves this woman from prostitution and he saves her from doing exactly what he did. Because he found himself, and I believe that that's probably so. Again, hinted to in the story. I think there's something very strange in the second half of the story. If a woman came to you in this situation and said, my husband's been taken captive. What would you do? I mean, what would any of us do? Yeah, you put your hand in your pocket, you take out money, and you give it to her. Pentecaca didn't do that. Pentecaca didn't do that. Why? Why didn't Pentecaca give her money?
He doesn't have it.
He's a poor schlemiel. He too is probably finds himself forced, quote unquote forced. We all have choice in life. But he probably found himself forced to make a living this way. Exactly. That's the point. Why didn't he just give money? What he does is he sells his bed and he sells his mattress. Selling the bed and... Yes? Right. The ultimate sacrifice. In order to save her from entering a life of licentiousness, in order to fix the situation, he not only had to help her, but he had to give up his life of immorality. It was the ultimate sacrifice. And so now, Rabbi Abahu... That's right. So all of these strands here are playing out. They're all connected. Let's go back to Rabbi Abahu. Do we see change in Rabbi Abahu? Where did he start? Where did he get to? That's right. Now, if you had to judge Rabbi Abahu, and I know I'm stepping on very sensitive ground right now when I even pose this kind of a question. But in the first half of the story, Rabbi Abahu, what judgment would you give of Rabbi Abahu? Is the author of the story looking at him in a positive light, in a neutral light? How would you say the storyteller is presenting Rabbi Abahu? Rabbi Abahu has an open mind? From the beginning. So I'm asking you, I'm not asking you at the end, I'm asking you from the beginning. When you look at Rabbi Abahu in the beginning of the story, do you say, what? He's skeptical. He has righteous, I think he has righteous indignation. Who? Pentecaca? And that goes back to the point of the two questions. There are two questions that he has. It's interesting that Rabbi Abahu seems to be tangential in the story. It opens up with him, he asks two questions, and he makes a concluding remark. But the rest of it is really focusing on Pentecaca and Pentecaca's conversation with the woman. But Rabbi Abahu, I think, is really essential to the story. And in the beginning of the story, there is this righteous indignation. And again, the first half of the story is not necessary if Rabbi Abahu was simply trying to find out what's special about Pentecaca, when you would think that there shouldn't be anything, I should say differently, when you would think that Pentecaca would be the last person who should be the Shliach Tzibur for the community, to lead prayers for the rains to come down. A person who does this for a living, he's the person who's going to have his prayers answered. And so Rabbi Abahu comes to this with huge reluctance. And he's probably troubled that he had this vision, that this is the man to do it. And the question that he asks is an inappropriate question because he knows what Pentecacca does for a living. It's almost that he's rubbing in his face what he does for a living. And he's throwing it at him. Tell me, what do you do for a living? It's almost like he is expressing out loud his indignation. Pentecacca didn't do anything other than what he normally does. And he brought him before him. Who knows what other people were standing around at the time? And he says, tell me what you do for a living. And we see a beginning of change in Rabbi Abahu after the man answers the questions. Because we see the kind of person that Pentecacca is. There's something more to him than just this common lowlife, if you will. Yes. Right. Okay. Okay. I can't say that. I can't invalidate that reading. And a lot of these stories are really open to numerous ways of looking at it. And I certainly respect that. And I think the text holds that. I think, slightly differently, that in fact Rabbi Abahu has this righteous indignation and he evolves over the course of the story. He comes from a person who can't understand why Pentecacca would be the person to have the reins come down and ultimately comes to understand why in fact. And the reason I say that is not just because of this story, but because of numerous stories in the Talmud in which rabbis are free game for criticism. And a phrase that I always like to say is that unlike Midrash, agadic stories that you'll find in the Talmud were written by the rabbis for the rabbis. The text of the Talmud was really meant for scholars. It wasn't meant for the commoner. And so it became a text for the scholars, and it was fair game to be able to use your greatest role models and show them in a negative light in order to be able to convey messages. And so showing Rabbi Abahu initially in a negative light, and then ultimately it turns around that he comes to be enlightened, is something that the rabbis of the Talmud are not at all defensive about or afraid to go in that direction. So other literature where it was meant from the very beginning to be read by a larger audience, you'll see less of that. But here, again, there's this lack of defensiveness on the part of the rabbis, and it becomes a tool to use the greatest rabbis that you know. And these stories may be written hundreds of years after the rabbis actually lived. If you use people that you don't have to worry that respect for them will be lost because we hold them in such high esteem, you can even learn more from their mistakes. So that I kind of have an inclination to go in that direction. But definitely your reading is held within the text. And so by all means. And so ultimately you come at the end and Rabbi Abahu says, Kadai atasha titpaleo vatene. Let me ask another question. And sometimes the phrase Haikar Haser min Hasefer, the most essential thing is missing. What would you expect to have happen here? A drought comes and the rains are not coming. What would you expect, or should I say, who would you expect to pray, and the rains come down. A tzaddik, like Rabbi Abahu, right? That might be part of the question as well. How come Rabbi Abahu couldn't pray and the rains come down? What was wrong there? And if you go back to the story, the situation of this woman, what didn't she do before she went to the theater? She didn't go to the community. What would be the first thing if somebody was destitute and they didn't know where to go? Who's the first person you go to? You go to your rabbi, right? There's no going to the rabbi. You would expect that she would have gone to the rabbi to help her out. My husband has been taken captive. I have no money. And the rabbi then would have gone to the community. It tells us perhaps something about there was something not right about the way the community responds to needs. Maybe it was unresponsive, which ties us back then into the whole subject of the rains coming down. Why would there be a drought if the community perhaps is not behaving as it should? If the community is not responding with each other in a way that supports one another, then Hashem perhaps may try to find some mechanism in order to get the community to wake up. And Dafka, it's a person like Pentakaka who is willing to make the ultimate sacrifice. Not only did he help her out, but he had to take himself out of this life of ill repute in order to save this woman from entering a life of ill repute. The ultimate sacrifice is what Pentakaka does. To that, Rabbi Abahu says, "Kedai ata shetit paleo b'teana." It is kedai that you pray, and your prayers are answered. I want to point out something also. Nechama Leibovich always would point this out. She would say, Americans always add extra pronouns. They always say, if you look at the last line, kedai ata shetit paleo b'teana. It could have written kedai shetit paleo b'teana. It's kedai, right? Because shetit paleo includes the pronoun ata. So Americans, she says, always add these extra pronouns that are not necessary. So the authors of the stories here, didn't they have the same problems that North Americans have when they speak Hebrew? It must be an additional emphasis here. Kedai ata shetit paleel v'teaneh. So Rabbi Abahu is stressing the point, and the author of the story is stressing it on behalf of Rabbi Abahu. It's you as opposed to me or somebody else. And the Musar Haskel is, this is the kind of people that we need to be. And you have this wonderful story here, which is, again, it goes back to the conversation we were having before about the rabbis as opposed to the commoners. It is common in Agadic stories that the rabbis learn, not from other rabbis, but they learn from common people. And part of the message to the rabbis who are studying to become leaders in the community is, don't think you're so high and mighty, but you're going to be going out to the community, you're going to be serving the community, and you have to not think of yourself as higher than and greater than the people that you serve. You have to see yourself as a servant to them. And what your job is to help lead people. And maybe you have superior knowledge, but that doesn't mean that you're necessarily superior morally. And you have to be a guide to help people along. And so these stories then become a future corrective to rabbis to not make mistakes when they go out in the field. Yes. That's right. Rabbi Abahu is a Baal Tshuva. He's not. It's not just negative. That's why I said in the beginning of the story, Rabbi Abahu comes, in my opinion, comes across somewhat negatively, and he starts to evolve when he gets the answer to the first question, and then he realizes he's got to ask the correct question. So he gets to the next question, which is the right question. What did you do good? He hears the story, and then he comes and realizes it's not me who should be praying and have the rains come down. It's Dafka Pentakaka. He needs to be the leader of our community at this moment because of who he is. And Rabbi Abahu is the Baal Tshuva in the story. There's lots of subtext, right? He's a Baal Tshuva. Pentakaka was a Baal Tshuva. Yes. Yes. Right. That's right. That's right. Yes. Right. 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 Now, the big question here that I have been asked numerous times is, wait a second, Pentakaka is he working or is he not working? Right, because in the beginning of the story he said, "Chamesh avirot oto ha'ish over b'chol yom." Is that in the past tense or the present tense? It seems like it's in the present tense, which creates a bit of a problem here. I have taught this story, I don't know how many times. If I've taught this story 30 times, that would not be an exaggeration. I've taught fifth graders this story. I have taught university professors this story. I've taught all kinds of groups this story. The last time I taught this story, somebody suggested something that I liked a lot, which is if you look at what Pentakaka says he does for a living, his answer is all of these secondary aspects of the theater. He decorates the theater. He brings the clothing to the bathhouse. He dances and prances, all these things. But it doesn't say that he does the thing that gave us trouble to understand what he does for a living in the first place when we were reading it. So maybe, this person suggested, maybe that after he sold his bed and the mattress, he did a different kind of job. He didn't go back to that terrible thing that he was doing before, but now he was doing perhaps a supportive activity within that, but not the sin itself. And so that's he's still associated with that world, but he's associated on a secondary level. And I thought that was intriguing. I don't know what you think about that interpretation or not, but that's something to ponder. And I think I've reached the time limit, so I want to close. I selected this story at this time, I think for obvious reasons. We talk about sin, and we talk about teshuvah, and we talk about who is doing the teshuvah, the rabbi, the individual. There's much for us to learn from this story in terms of how we move forward in the season and the way that we're in a situation in which we are judged. But the truth of the matter is, as human beings, we're constantly judging others. And a story like this forces us to think twice and three times about the way that we judge others and allow ourselves to imagine that there may be, even within the most base of people at the first sight, some redeeming features in them, they who make up part of Klal Yisrael. And as a community, we'll stand before HaKadosh Baruch Hu asking for slicha, mechila, and we should all be able to confront our Maker with all kinds of zechuyot so that we should have a shana tova. And shana tova to all of you.